It is Monday, April 4th here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. In the next half hour, an international anti-corruption organization tells us what it thinks of the Panama Papers, a new investigative journalism report on corruption in global finance. Our correspondent on the Greek island of Lesbos will speak to us about what happened on the first day of migrants being deported to Turkey. And we'll find out why U.S. investors are looking forward to comments this week from members of the U.S. Federal Reserve. It's all ahead on International Edition. Well, the international financial community is coming to terms with corruption in global finance with the publication on Sunday of the Panama Papers. Global Witness is an international NGO established in 1993 that works to break the links between natural resource exploitation, conflict, poverty, and corruption. I spoke to Aaron Shornick, a policy advisor at Global Witness, specializing in banks and corruption, and I asked her why her organization is so concerned about the offshore companies exposed in the Panama Papers.
What these offshore jurisdictions allow for is for companies to be created where the real person who owns or controls that company to remain hidden. The little-known fact is that this is also a homegrown issue in the United States. The U.S. is one of the top incorporators of companies in the world. It's one of the easiest places to incorporate a company that we call anonymously owned, and where is a favored destination for corrupt politicians to park their money and use it in a way that doesn't benefit those at home. One such example where an anonymous company was involved in a natural resource deal was in Nigeria, where the Nigerian government acted as a straw man. And it turns out that an oil minister at the time received over $1.1 billion in that oil deal.
You talked about the United States being a place where companies can be anonymously owned and created, but it doesn't seem like there were many references to U.S. companies, personalities, officials in these Panama Papers. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, I think that because, as I mentioned, the U.S. is one of the easiest places in the world to create a company where these corrupt and criminal are able to enjoy such anonymity, it may be an issue right there and being played out as we see in front of us. I think there still is time for more and more information to come out as these leaks continue and as people continue to do analysis of the troves of documents. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more to come that implicates U.S. jurisdictions and persons here in the U.S.
What kind of corrupt activities do you think are going on in the United States with anonymously owned companies?
We have examples where the Iranian government was able to hide the fact that it owned a Fifth Avenue skyscraper, and the people who were using that space were paying rent to the government. We have examples where the Zetas from Mexico used a company organized in Oklahoma to move their drug money through the U.S. And we have examples where taxpayers and the government have been ripped off of millions of dollars in the procurement system, where people who have access to government information are either able to rig bids or secure contracts in a way that they're able to make millions of dollars and never be detected.
Well, what do you think are the solutions for stopping this kind of corrupt activity?
Currently in front of the U.S. Congress is a bill called the Incorporation Transparency and Law Enforcement Assistance Act. What that bill would require is that, if it were to be law, is that U.S. companies disclose the real human beings that either control or derive economic benefit from those companies, which would really shed light on who is doing business in the U.S. and if whether they're here for the right purposes. The U.K. is starting to take major steps forward in creating a registry where that information will be public. In the U.S., the bills are silent as to whether that information will be public. In the U.S. and the EU as well, information is in the process of being collected in public registries and some registries where the information won't totally be public as well. So steps are being taken. The U.S. has tended to be a laggard in this way, but this, as I mentioned, would go a significant way in exposing those criminal and corrupt who are enjoying the secrecy that anonymous companies provide.
Well, thank you very much to Erin Shornick. She is a policy advisor with Global Witness here in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's turn to our social media segment and International Editions. Ji Abby Lee is in the studio to bring us what's trending online. Hi, Ji.
Hi, Michael.
So it's been 24 hours since the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists broke the news of the Panama Papers. Mm-hmm. What has the online reaction been so far?
So the interest for the topic has grown rapidly. Remember when we were just getting ready for the segment with Jim yesterday?
I do remember.
Yeah, you were preparing for your interview. I was preparing for the segment. And that was about 4 hours after the news broke. And I was talking about how fewer than 1,000 people liked a clip from Germany's Süddeutsche Zeitung's Twitter account.
Has that changed?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So the same clip which shows how the German daily's news reporters got started on the investigative reporting has been retweeted more than 5,000 times overnight. Also, more than 3,000 people liked it, so that's a threefold jump.
Wow. Well, you tweeted a poll yesterday on your Twitter account asking people about their thoughts regarding the absence of American names in the Panama Paper, as I was just discussing in my interview. What was the result of your poll?
More than 55% of the respondents answered that's just a reflection of reality in which U.S. is less corrupt than the other countries mentioned in the paper. That being said, there is a development on this front from the Justice Department today. Both The Hill and the CNN tweeted about it. The DOJ announced it is reviewing the Panama Papers for possible financial wrongdoing.
Let's see what they uncover. But I understand the biggest political commotion as a result of these Panama Papers is coming from Iceland. Is that right?
Absolutely. The Panama Papers showed the prime minister and his wife allegedly owned bonds issued by the country's three biggest banks through an offshore company. Thousands of people are protesting outside its parliament today, calling on the prime minister to resign. And there are photos and clips of which you have seen probably of the protests all over social media. Michael?
Well, that Iceland prime minister has so far refused to resign, so we'll see what happens there. Thank you very much to Ji Abby Lee. She tweets for us from the VOA IE Twitter account, which is at VOA underscore IE. And of course, you can follow her as well at Ji Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Green Beat for a healthier planet.
There's nothing unusual about a rooftop garden, but how about a 23,000 square meter rooftop greenhouse growing vegetables in the middle of a Chicago winter? Here's Jen Freymark, co-founder of Gotham Greens.
10 degrees outside today here in Chicago, and you know, it's 75 degrees in here right now.
The greenhouse is about the size of two American football fields, but it's not just the size that's unusual. It's what's growing in the greenhouse, which, by the way, sits on top of a soap factory and employs a wind turbine for part of its power. The power needed to grow warm weather lettuces. John Damus of Chicago's Lux Bar is one of Gotham Green's customers.
Be able to cut down lettuce and harvest it by hand and have it delivered and on the plate within hours is a huge deal.
And it's a huge fuel saver because most of the greens available in cities like Chicago are grown in California, several thousand kilometers away. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
This is VOA's International Edition. The first group of Syrian refugees sent from Turkey under a controversial program have arrived in Europe. The 16 Syrian asylum seekers arrived in the northern German city of Hanover on Monday morning. Another group of 16 is expected later Monday. Meanwhile, deported migrants sent to Turkey from the Greek island of Lesbos have begun disembarking from the boats. Officials say 131 migrants, mostly South Asians, arrived in Turkey from Greece on Monday. Our correspondent Heather Murdoch is in Lesbos, and I asked her what she had seen of the migrants earlier in the day.
Authorities gave journalists various times as to when the deportations would take place, so we didn't know when it was going to happen. Actually, when I called them, they actually said, "Are you crazy for even asking us what time?" Other people got various times. Anyway, it started very early in the morning before daybreak, and only a few people were there holding vigil. By the time we got there at 8 a.m., the deportations had long taken place, and protesters were starting to arrive. There was about maybe 50 protesters. There was as many journalists as there were protesters, calling for the EU to halt their plan. And there was a small argument with some Coast Guard officials trying to get protesters on a boat back to shore. And They were heartfelt, for sure, in concern with these people that were deported, but it was a little surprising how few people were there, considering what a large deal this has been.
Do you feel that that is because the local people, Greeks as a whole, are enthusiastic about seeing this migrant swap with Turkey go forward?
Greeks as a whole are very mixed. Of course, there is a right-wing part of the Greek islands and the country in general that does very much want to see the migrants all sent home. There's also a lot of sympathy for travelers here because Greece is also, you know, a relatively poor country compared to the rest of Europe. So they say that they understand their suffering. In this island, the economy of this island has actually, in many ways, improved because of the refugee crisis. Tourism went down, but tourism wasn't that great here to start with. So this huge influx of people coming to Lesbos and renting hotel rooms, buying boat tickets, buying food and other items that they need, shoes, clothes, has actually been a boon to a lot of businesses here. So some people are just sad to see them go.
Well, so what are the migrants and refugees on Lesbos saying, you know, today about the prospect of being deported to Turkey?
Well, the migrants and refugees that we could talk to today were almost near a state of panic. The camp itself, where most of the people on the island, somewhere between 3,000 and at the very highest estimate, 7,000 people are in, is now on lockdown. The people haven't been able to leave by choice since the 20th of March. But just today, as opposed to the few days before, journalists or activists can't even go up to the fence to say hello and ask the people inside how they're feeling. There is one camp left in the capital city that is actually kind of what they call a free camp, where people can come and go by choice. They don't have to get permission to live there. And it's a very, it's like a makeshift tent city with barely any resources. Those people have been told their camp is closing. A lot of them are Pakistani, and Pakistani people are the majority of the people that have already been deported, and they expect to be deported too.
Well, thanks very much to our correspondent on the Greek island of Lesbos, Heather Murdoch, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, U.S. stocks closed slightly lower on Monday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about a third of 1%. For more on what's behind the drop and what investors are looking forward to later this week, I spoke to our financial reporter in New York, Jill Malandrino.
I think what's really driving the market is we've had a six-week run, which is quite astounding, and it is time for a little bit of corrective action. Oil has been down itself about 6% from the highs, so you're going to see a little bit of a pullback from there. Earlier in the morning, we saw the industrials down. There was a downgrade out of Bernstein on General Electric. So anytime you get a downgrade of a big international conglomerate, clearly a Dow component, you're going to see some pressure in the market for that reason. So I don't think it's anything to get nervous about that the market's falling significantly. It's just some corrective action off of an incredible six-week run that we've seen.
Well, why are investors going to be watching the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen and her colleagues this week?
Well, we're really in what's called an earnings vacuum right now. There's maybe six or seven consumer-related companies that are reporting this week, and the macroeconomic data calendar is quiet as well. But the reason we have seen this uptrend, whether it's in the U.S. or in other global markets, is the Federal Reserve and other global banks have been what's called very accommodative or very dovish with monetary policy, meaning they're keeping interest rates very low. In some cases around the globe, they're with negative interest rates. The reason why the markets have responded positively to that in the U.S. is when monetary policy is more accommodative, more easy, it means that the Federal Reserve is willing to invest money back into the markets, which keeps asset prices supportive, which was why we've seen assets such as stocks, which are considered risk-on assets, move higher. The reason why we're going to look at Chairman Yellen this week, and she has six other colleagues speaking, is investors and traders want to get a clue to see if they can pick up anything at their speaking engagements, whether or not they're going to keep this dovish tone in monetary policy, or if there's anyone that's saying it's time to raise interest rates at this point, because those kinds of comments will certainly drive headlines and in turn move the markets.
Well, Jill Malandrino, our financial reporter in New York, thanks for speaking to International Edition.
Great. Thank you very much.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. Thousands of storks in southern Europe have given up their winter migratory habits to feast on trash in landfills. As VOA's Roseanne Skirbel reports, the storks have taken up residency near the landfills, but not just because of the food.
When dump trucks pull into landfills in Spain and Portugal, storks are not far behind. They've come for a banquet of rotten fish, rancid chicken, leftover hamburger, and pizza. The putrid smell doesn't bother the storks, who nest nearby and raise their young. These same birds used to winter in sub-Saharan Africa, but many don't anymore, says Aldina Franco, a conservation ecologist. Her team at the University of East Anglia in England equipped the birds with GPS devices to track their movement. She says migrating patterns began to change about 30 years ago.
In the 80s, we started seeing some individuals remaining in Europe the whole year, and then that number started increasing gradually and increased a lot and exponentially in recent decades, so that we now have only in Portugal more than 14,000 storks wintering in the country.
Not all storks have adopted the landfill as home. Some birds continue to drop in on a seasonal basis, although their numbers are falling. Franco says those that stay year-round are opportunistic, adapting to changes in the environment, including a warmer climate.
The climate becomes milder, so the winters are milder. Therefore, there will be more grasshoppers, more invertebrates available on natural habitats. Then, at the same time, this crayfish comes to Europe and invades, and it's an extra food resource for the storks. And at the same time as well, there is more landfill, more food that is wasted and thrown away, therefore also another extra resource.
Storks can live 25 years or longer, which gives researchers time to study the mechanism that is changing migrating habits. Franco is interested to see how those habits change again, as rubbish dump sites in Portugal in coming years are scheduled to be gradually replaced with compost factories.
Will the storks remain, the ones that are resident, will they remain in Iberia and eventually starve? Or will they completely switch strategy and go and feed on natural habitats because food is now more abundant due to global warming? Or will they become migrants? Possibly again, we don't know that.
Franco hopes to answer those questions in future studies. She writes about her work in the most recent issue of the journal Movement Ecology. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Music icon Beyoncé has come out with a new sporting clothes line called Ivy Park. International Edition's David Byrd spoke about it with VOA Solange host Shauna Renee.
Well, this is fairly recent, this athleisure trend. And these are clothes for the girl who doesn't want to get dressed up, but she still wants to look comfortable yet stylish. There are a lot of designers coming out with this. So it's no surprise that this is the direction that Beyoncé would choose to go in. Now, this is her second line. Of course, she had House of Darion back in 2004.
The way you say that, Darion.
Just like I say, Beyoncé.
Uh-huh.
You know, House of Darion back in 2004. She and her mother started that. And that was sort of a a casual lot of denim and then some dressier stuff. So I think this is just for the more mature woman, because Beyonce now is in her mid-30s. She's a mom. And I mean, I know she's not out, you know, going to the grocery store and things. I think she realizes that a lot of her fans are in that space. They want to look good but be comfortable. So that's what Ivy Park is all about, now, from what I can see.
The video that she released with this has her in a gym on a treadmill and stretching and in a pool, you know, and all of her backup dancers look absolutely fabulous.
Well, but of course.
Around her, you know, doing all this athletic stuff. And, you know, she's doing a narration about how her dad used to get her up and get her go running and how that park became a refuge. That's a very clever marketing technique on her part, because it's appealing to the mid-30s mom who is remembering, you know, I'm not 20 anymore. And I remember when I was a kid and I used to go and hide and have my own secret garden kind of thing.
Sure. And then the other thing that really stood out for me was that she said this is a place where she learned to be disciplined, that it was a place that she would go to sort of overcome her fears. Her dad would tell her to run. She wanted to stop. She kept going. When she gets scared, she goes there, and it reminds her that she has the discipline and the courage to keep pushing. She talked about in this video, which, by the way, is on my Twitter and Facebook feeds, that, you know, when she was giving birth to Blue Ivy, or she was about to have her daughter Blue Ivy, that she went back to that park, and that gave her the courage to move forward. And so it is brilliant in that every person, not just a woman of a certain age, but every person can relate to that at some point, being afraid. And then to see Beyonce, who appears to be fearless, at least as a performer and a businesswoman, admit that, yeah, there are times when I get afraid and it gets so bad that I have to go sit under a tree in a park and meditate for a few minutes, is refreshing and makes you feel like you're not alone. And that's what it's all about.
The park became a state of mind. The park became my strength. The park is what made me who I am. Where's your park?
Well, the Ivy Park line is going to be available worldwide. It's going to be online and in-store on April 14th, which is in just a couple of weeks. You can check out Shauna's Twitter account. She is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. And you can listen for her in the Soul Lounge. You can find that on our website, voanews.com.
That's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State named 14 reformers and civil society activists as recipients of the 2016 International Women of Courage Award. They included women from nations across the globe, from Mauritania to Malaysia and beyond. 13 accepted the award personally from Secretary of State John Kerry, who called the awardees role models whose lives convey a clear message. Don't accept the unacceptable or wait for someone else to step up. Act in the name of justice. But as the 13 honorees sat on the dais at the State Department, Chinese honoree Ni Ulan was absent. Ni Ulan, a human rights defender, is known for her work in championing housing rights and freedom of religion. For her efforts, she has been subjected to harassment, imprisonment, and torture. Although she was not allowed to travel to the United States to receive her award, Secretary of State Kerry praised Ni Ulan in absentia.
Her outspokenness has led her to imprisonment, during which she was beaten so badly that she became paralyzed from the waist down. But that hasn't stopped her. She continues to defend the property rights of Beijing residents whose homes have been slated for demolition. And she has launched the Ni Ulan Human Rights Office to connect activists and lawyers across China to advance the cause of justice. Ni Ulan, for your leadership in advocating for the rule of law and full equal rights in China, we honor you today as a woman of courage.
The Chinese government's treatment of Ni Ulan is part of a concerning pattern of its targeting human rights defenders and civil society activists in China for reprisal. As U.S. Ambassador to China Max Baucus has said, the lawyers who bravely fight for the legal rights of religious believers, journalists, victims of forced evictions, should be embraced as partners, not enemies of the government. Secretary Kerry has observed, strong respect for human rights actually unleashes a country's potential and helps to advance growth and progress. That's a powerful reason why governments should celebrate and not thwart the work of courageous human rights defenders like Ni Ulan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.